Welcome to the audio podcast of The Table,
a new United Methodist community of faith taking shape at Central UMC in Sacramento, California.
The podcasts currently feature the messages of Matt Smith and Linda Duhirsu,
with a musical introduction by Anthony Coleman, our director of music.
Thanks for listening.
Isaiah 43:1. But now thus says the Lord, He who created you, O Jacob, He who formed you, O Israel, do not fear, for I have redeemed you. I have called you by name, you are mine. Luke 3:15-16 and 21-22. As the people were filled with expectation, and all were questioning in their hearts concerning John, whether he might be the Messiah, John answered them all of them by saying, I baptize you with water. But one who is more powerful than I is coming. I am not worthy to untie the thong of his sandals. He will baptize you with the Holy Spirit and fire. Now when all the people were baptized, and when Jesus also had been baptized and was praying, the heaven was opened, and the Holy Spirit descended upon him in bodily form like a dove. And a voice came from heaven, You are my son, the beloved. With you I am well pleased.
And let all the poor, let them come to the water. Bring the ones who are laden, bring them all to the Lord. Bring the children without might, easy the load and light. Come to the Lord. Come to the Lord. Come to the Lord. Come to the Lord. To the Lord.
You heard Tim read the words that the prophet Isaiah declares, that God's love and choosing of the people of Israel was there when the prophet said this, Do not fear, for I have redeemed you. I have called you by name, and you are mine. And then the voice we believe to be God's voice declared to Jesus at his baptism, You are my son, the beloved, and with you I am well pleased. And then the voice of the Christian tradition comes in and declares, we are incorporated into God's mighty acts of salvation and given new birth through water and the Spirit. And all of this is God's gift that's offered to each of us without a price. And that's how it begins. That's how it begins. First with God's choosing, then with God's love, and then with God being so well pleased with us that God offers us forgiveness and life and saving grace. That's where it began for Israel. That's where it began for Jesus. And for the past 163 years, this is where it has begun for those who have gathered in this church. First as Asbury Chapel, then as First Methodist Church, then as Central United Methodist Church, and now as The Table at Central. At first, we were with a building downtown at 7th and J. Then we had no building. It burned to the ground. Then in a new building, we rose at 15th and J, and then we moved to 51st, and now we're on this property. And this was most likely a field when it all began. And once we came to this property, we weren't here yet. We were over at the other end in a garage, a garage. Then we moved a little closer to the social hall. And we have photographs of baptisms and marriages and funerals in that social hall. And then finally, 1964, we come into this building. You see, whenever and wherever God gathers God's people, the beginning is at God's baptismal grace, with God's unconditional words that you are mine, and you are beloved, and I, says God, am well pleased with you. You see, Jesus could never have done that apart from God's empowerment and God's blessing of those words. Before baptism came into this fancy language that you will hear us, we call it creedal language, that Matt and I will use shortly. Before that, simply expressed, baptism is this. It's our human experience of unconditional acceptance and love and well-being from God lived out in this family structure. That's what baptism is. And through baptism, we say yes to God's grace, and we become adopted into God's family. And for parents, these words are reminders of declarations of love towards a child. And we all know that those kinds of declarations of love towards our children are absolutely vital to their development, right? So what we know is that any child who strives to affirm his or her own identity and self-worth without having heard about love from their parents, that child would face tremendously intense and difficult struggles. So God's voice models for us a parental blessing that we ourselves also receive from God. We, who are made in God's image and whom God allows to be co-creators in the process of birth, we are obligated in return to emulate God in some fashion in our blessing, not only of the children that are in this room, but of all of God's children that God shares with us. Now, we have five persons up here who are going to be baptized. This is the moment when three are saying yes to God and two are having it said by their parents on their behalf, and they will grow and be surrounded by all their days by God's family. But that's not where the story ends, because if it ended, we wouldn't be here. The rest of the story is the working out part of our baptismal covenant that we're about to make with them. The covenant that so many of us in this room have already made or been given on our behalf. Just as, think about this, most all of Jesus's story was lived out after he was baptized. After the baptismal time. You see, we go forth from this place, out of this room, every day, out into the world. And into our classrooms, we go into the coffee houses, we go to our workplaces, we move into our clinic exam rooms and into our courtrooms. We're in the dining commons, we're in our living rooms, right? We're on soccer fields, we're in swimming pools. We leave here and we live into the places where God is calling us to practice doing good and doing no harm and practicing our spiritual disciplines. One of our favorite theologians, mine and Matt's, is Barbara Brown Taylor, and as usual, she says it so beautifully like this. When God calls, people respond in a variety of ways. Some pursue ordination, like me and Matt, and others put pillows over their heads. But the vast majority seek to answer God's call by changing how they live their more or less ordinary lives. There's this really old song And honestly, I can't stand the song anymore. It became a dirge drilled into my brain. But it kept coming to me while I was writing this sermon, and we're not singing it. And Brendan doesn't know it, so don't even try. But there's a beauty to the song because it's simple. And it tells our story really simply. And the chorus is this: they'll know we are Christians by our love. And the verses are this: we will walk with each other, we will walk hand in hand, we will work with each other, we will work side by side, we'll guard each one's dignity, we'll save each one's pride. That's how we live into our baptismal covenant, day in and day out. We live by example. We teach others to do the same in word and in action. And here we do it through regular attendance in our worship. We gather in our kitchen tables week in and week out, and we teach godly play so that our children know the stories. And then we reach in love by providing food and shelter in just a few months to 100 unhoused adults. That's how we are Christian people. We do it because of God's love for us and because of our love for God. That's the simple truth. But as simple as it may sound, sometimes that's really hard to hold on to. It's hard to get a grasp. And we get confused, or some of us become disillusioned, or worse yet, we get wounded in the process of trying these things out. And instead of living out of our baptismal covenants, you know, we somehow confuse these waters of baptism. We confuse them with judgment. Instead of grace, we think it's conditional water in here. Instead of love, we think it's a bargaining place. That instead of saying, I love you, God is saying, do this, and then I'm going to love you. Do good, and then I'm going to love you. Do no harm, or I'm going to stop loving you. Stay in love with me, or God will say, I'm going to break up with you. Right? We get confused. We get lost. And that usually happens when hard things come along. Like when someone we love dies, or when a relationship dies, or when our passion goes, our zest for life. We get disillusioned. Back to Barbara Brown Taylor, she says, those are grim times when we get disillusioned, in which the God of our fondest dreams is nowhere to be found. But down, she says, in the darkness below those dreams, in the deep place where all of our notions about God have come to naught, there is still reason for hope. Because disillusionment actually is not so bad. Disillusionment is the loss of illusion about ourselves, about the world, and about God. And while it almost always is painful, okay, I recognize that, it's not necessarily a bad thing to lose the lies we have mistaken for the truth. Disillusioned, then, you see, we come to understand that God will never conform to our expectations. It's never going to happen. You see, many of the disillusioned don't have the heart to pursue this great freedom that God gives us, because the pain of our losses sometimes is too hard for us, or it's just too huge. And they've lost the God who was supposed to be the God they were maybe raised with, and their fear of the God who might be makes it absolutely impossible for them to move forward in faith. And I know I'm describing some of us in this room. So what happens then? when you lose the God that was supposed to be and you're afraid of the God who might be. Often what happens is we choose a next step. Instead of faith, we choose anger at how hard everything is. Or anger at how hypocritical everybody is. Or anger at how everybody just lets us down all the time. All the time. And it isn't just a made-up them that I'm talking about. I'm talking about me. I think I'm talking about a lot of people. Because we all go through this at some point. It's called the wilderness. The wilderness of disillusionment. But in that wilderness, we're not without choices. And for those of us who are willing, we can keep swimming. And we can wade out little by little, a little bit further. And then we're taught how to swim. And then sometimes we actually master the strokes. And then finally, when we're in that swimming and mastering of the strokes, we suddenly catch a glimpse that maybe we're worrying a little bit less, just a little bit, about where that next landfall is. And we actually start enjoying the waters of faith. That's because we've gone deeper at that point. It takes work. And there's a young person who is very clear about this, and we're going to show you a video about him.
Give it up for Ethan Metzger.
There's someone I know who's slow to commend but quick to condescend, who's reluctant to lend a hand but ready to point and laugh at those who need one. One day I was in school, in class, explaining my Judaism when this person has the audacity to exclaim, "You know, you're only Jewish because your parents forced you to be. I mean, it's all fake. You don't pray to God because you want to. You only pray to God because your parents made you think you have to. You don't keep any of the laws of your own free will. Your parents just made you feel guilty that you didn't keep them." My classmates smirked. "Your parents brainwashed you your whole life, made you think you were doing God's work, but they were just imposing restriction upon restriction. You don't have any real conviction of your own. You don't really know anything about anything." A silence swept over the classroom. I could sense all my friends look at me as to how I would react. I felt like this tear went after me, and more importantly, my parents. "Excuse me," I thought, "my parents brainwashed me?" I had to think of a response, but the more I thought, the more I realized that the student actually had a very valid argument. I thought to myself, "You're absolutely right. My parents did brainwash me. From the time I entered this world, my parents brainwashed me. As early as I can remember, my parents were brainwashing me to have respect for other people, for their belongings, and for myself. Nice. Since I was little, they corrupted me into thinking that I need to treat everyone else the way I would want to be treated, no matter what. My parents programmed me into believing that I should stand up for someone if that person were being picked on, that I shouldn't be a bystander if I could stop things from taking place. My parents brainwashed me? Yeah. My father twisted my infant brain in such a horrific way that he made me value my integrity. And to make matters even worse, he led by example. And my mom, she incessantly told me as a child again and again and again to just do the best you can. And that idea has now become so ingrained in my mind that I don't define success as whether I get an A or win the game, but as to give it my all. My parents perverted my way of thinking, causing me to believe I need to be accepting of other people and their beliefs. They contaminated my childhood with mottos and maxims and lessons about love and faith and character, and yes, religion too. And I'm sorry for you that your parents clearly didn't infect your DNA with any of these ideals. But I didn't say any of that, because my parents also polluted my conscience to believing that I shouldn't judge someone until I walk a mile in their shoes, which it makes me think that God must run millions of marathons each day. And quite frankly, I don't have the stamina for that. But here's what I did say. You can call it brainwashing if you want. That's fine. I call it teaching. Thank you.
You can call it brainwashing if you want. I call it teaching. Some folks might hear the invitation to be baptized as an invitation to be brainwashed. Are we brainwashed? Is that what the baptismal waters are? A level of brainwashing fluids? Some folks might have felt that way in Jesus' day too. I mean, after all, the man that baptized Jesus was a guy named John, and he dressed in camel hair, roamed the desert, and had a subsistence diet of locusts and wild honey. Dude, if you were going to be baptized, who would you choose, that or like Matt in a suit? I'm thinking, whoo, Jesus went towards something that looked risky. And instead of walking away from that risk, walking away from the water, Jesus and many others that day chose to be baptized by John. And then Jesus taught his disciples, and they chose to teach those around them, and so on, until John Wesley, the founder of Methodism, began to teach his people in a methodical way. And then that spread all the way to Sacramento, California in 1850, right? And we're back where I started, where a small group of people began to teach here. And now we choose to continue that legacy. God calls each and every one of us by name, from Jesus' day to our day. That name is Beloved. And we answer this day and every day with our lives, but especially today, we present ourselves and our children for baptism. Almost made it. For baptism. Let's do that.
I could just sit and wait for all your goodness, hope to feel your presence. And I could just stay on, I could just stay right where I am and hope to feel you, hope to feel something again. Oh, and I could hold on, I could hold on to who I am and never let you change me from the inside. And I could be safe, oh, I could be safe here in your arms and never leave home, never let these walls down. But you have called me deeper, you have called me deeper, and I'll go where you will lead me, Lord. You have called me deeper, you have called me deeper.